This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. President Bush's nominee to be the next Surgeon General of the United States, James Holzinger, has run into a firestorm of controversy over homosexuality. We're going to be talking about what is going on there and why it matters. So far as I'm concerned, it's one of the most interesting developments in a very, very long time in the public controversy over these issues, because it raises all of the most crucial questions related to homosexuality and what it all means. We'll be back to that in just a moment. To get ready to call to join the conversation, just join us at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I have at my website, albertmueller.com, just in the last few hours, posted an article on recommended summer reading. It's really part one of three, and I recommended several books. I'm going to be recommending some others over the course of the summer. And I'm encouraged by the fact that I have a lot of listeners and readers to the website that write or call in and say, what are you recommending to read over the summer? And so when I'm talking about summer reading, you know, I recommend a lot of heavy stuff. I did, just a few weeks ago, 10 Christian biographies that I want to recommend. These are books for fun. And I really want to suggest that as adults, and especially as parents, you model reading for fun. If I could just encourage you to do that for your children, let your children know that reading is not always a class assignment, that reading is not something you consider a chore, that reading is something you do for fun. So while you're planning your fun this summer, let me suggest to you five really, really fine books that I recommend without hesitation. All of these are in the nonfiction category, and they're basically all about history. And I may recommend some fictional books, but, you know, I'm a little reluctant to do that because fiction's so much a matter of taste and of context and all the rest. And I love reading novels, but I'm hard-pressed sometimes to recommend a novel to someone because you almost have to know them to know what kind of novel they might like. But in the nonfiction and history category, there's just some great stuff out there. And as I'm talking to you today, I all of a sudden realize there may be some people out there panicking, saying, what in the world am I going to do for Father's Day? Well, I think any one of these titles would be welcomed by any dad. And I'll admit there's kind of a male bias here towards some of the historical issues that the guys are likely really to like. The first book I recommend is Colin Woodard's book, The Republic of Pirates, Being the True and Surprising Story of the Caribbean Pirates and the Man Who Brought Them Down. And I love that book because I learned so much about the Golden Age of Pirates. Between 1715 and 1725, pirates actually ran what was more or less a republic based in the Bahamas. They took over the Caribbean. I had no idea before reading this book how intertwined piracy of that era was with the American colonial experiment, with the rebellion against Britain, and with the geopolitics of the expansionist powers. You had France and Portugal and Spain. You had Holland and Britain all involved in maritime expansionism and in trying to control these areas of the world. And you had these pirates who came along and became some of the most popular figures in the culture of the day. And by the way, the kind of swashbuckling reputation that they got the hard way. They earned it. But the interesting thing is that even though the pirates were known for brutality, it was often more show. They actually treated people better than many of the colonial powers did. One of the big questions you have to ask, and I really hadn't thought of this until reading Colin Woodard's book, is why were the pirates so popular among the people? Well, it's because they treated the people better than did their own governments at times. And they certainly treated their crew better than the crew on maritime vessels, market vessels, and the naval vessels of the governments of the era. For instance, I had no idea that the pirates were based upon early experiments in democracy. Now, let's get to the bottom line. They stole stuff. And the interesting thing is they stole stuff that had probably already been stolen. The morality of all this also gets very, very interesting. When you read this, you'll understand that piracy was something of a short-lived experiment because there was no way that the modern economy could emerge with piracy being so rampant on the high seas. And so it's a fascinating thing. It has to do with efforts to topple a king and efforts to help the colonies. It's a fascinating book. It's Colin Woodard's book, The Republic of Pirates. The second book I recommend is Michael Beschloss's new book on presidential courage. The subtitle is Brave Leaders and How They Changed America. You've probably seen Michael Beschloss on television. He's a very popular historian, and he's good at telling a story. It's one of the reasons why his books do so well. This book on presidential courage is important because it brings together some of the most interesting history, some of it relatively unknown to Americans. He, for instance, gives a wonderful vignette of George Washington demonstrating courage during the treaty crisis in the late years of his presidential administration. A lot of courage shown by America's first president, and an incident that's really not much remembered now. My favorite chapter in the book is the one in which he portrays Harry Truman making the decision to recognize the State of Israel in 1948. Very, very interesting story. And this is an historian that tells us through anecdote and through the narrative, you know, much of what was going on in the country and in the world at the time. And it's kind of like reading history the way a novelist would write it. And it is very, very interesting. He covers presidents from George Washington to Ronald Reagan in moments of great courage. The third book I recommend is Masters of the Air by Donald Miller. The subtitle of that book is America's Bomber Boys Who Fought the Air War Against Nazi Germany. I came across this book and was captivated by it. I really had not thought about the fact that the 8th Air Force, which was the earliest American unit really involved in a massive attack upon Nazi Germany, lost 77% of all its pilots and flyers and crew over the course of the war. 77%. As a matter of fact, the total casualties experienced just by the 8th Air Force ended up being greater than all of the casualties taken in the entire war by the United States Marine Corps. It's hard for Americans now to recognize that for a very long period of time, the only Americans actually fighting the Nazis were the bomber boys in the air. And they were boys. That's the other part of this story that is so touching. You're talking about boys who are 17, 18, 19 years old. They have been farmers. They've been kids. They've been in high school. The next thing you know, they're flying these massive bombers, B-17s in particular, over Nazi Germany, over Nazi-occupied Europe. And they were making their adjustment to manhood, knowing that their manhood might be very short in terms of their lives as men. Very, very short. It's a very, very compelling read, and it reminds us again that freedom is never free. It's another reminder to us that what you're talking about here is a massive investment of human courage, and we bear the legacy of that even now. The fourth book I recommend is James Swanson's book, Manhood, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer. Most of us probably think we know something of the story of Abraham Lincoln's assassination and of the chase to find John Wilkes Booth. But, you know, there's a lot of that story, and especially of America in that era, that most people probably do not know. And just an example. John Wilkes Booth was already one of the most famous people in America. In a day in which the stage actor was very much like what the Hollywood actor would be today, John Wilkes Booth was one of the most famous actors in America. We tend to forget now that Abraham Lincoln was assassinated by a man who was very famous. It would be like an American president being assassinated in the modern era by a Hollywood actor. It's a much more complicated story than most Americans remember, but it's also a reminder to us of how fragile the Union was at the end of the Civil War. Obviously, a nation torn in two, and the one great hope of many persons, that was Abraham Lincoln, to bring it together, just was something that did not happen. The last book I recommend in this series is Michael Oren's book, 6 Days of War, June 1967, in the Making of the Modern Middle East. I actually mentioned this book earlier this week because it is the 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War. The 1967 war, 40 years ago, changed the Middle East. You can't understand the Middle East as it is today without understanding Israel's incredible victory. Michael Oren does a fantastic job. It's another one of those books of history that is so interesting, you find you can't put it down. And because it is history, you know how the story ends, but because the story is so compelling, you read it as if you do not. You imagine with Michael Oren, through his narrative, Israel being confronted with over 100,000 Egyptian troops. You begin to see the miracle that took place when the skies clear and the Israeli jets go down low over Egyptian airfields and discover all those planes are on the ground. They destroyed the Egyptian Air Force on the ground. Fascinating tales of courage. Summer reading is an opportunity to read some of those things you might not have time to read any other time of the year. These 5 books I recommend, I'll be recommending others during the course of the year, but because I received a couple of requests by email, I just might I just thought I might pass these along as Father's Day is fast approaching. You'll find the article with my short review of all five of these books at Albert Mohler, that's MOHLER.com. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Dr. James Holsinger, President George W. Bush's nominee to be the next Surgeon General of the United States. He had some things to say about homosexuality that have the gay rights community in an uproar. We're going to be talking about why that matters and how we should think about it. Back in just a moment. I'm Albert Mohler.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler program.
Welcome back. Dr. James Holsinger is President George W. Bush's nominee to be the next Surgeon General of the United States. He's a cardiologist. He has been the Chancellor of the University of Kentucky Medical Center. He has held many illustrious positions. We're going to be talking in a few moments about his educational background and all the rest, but he's under an attack from many because they accuse him of holding, quote, unscientific, end quote, views of homosexuality. And this is one of those stories that really draws us in to the worldview conflict of our age. And I hope together we're going to see that and try to think about this very clearly. What would you look for in a Surgeon General? Well, I guess that's the first question. And one of the things I would look for is a man whose education really sets him apart from others. A Surgeon General is supposed to be the top medical officer of the United States. Now, let's just get this straight about James Holsinger. What's his education and his background? He graduated from Duke University with a Bachelor of Arts degree in 1960. He received also the Doctor of Medicine degree from Duke. From Duke, he received a Ph.D. as well. He also graduated from the University of South Carolina with a master's degree in hospital financial management. And he holds another bachelor's degree from the University of Kentucky in human sciences and a master's degree in biblical studies from Asbury Theological Seminary. Now, I'll just tell you, I don't know many doctors with that kind of background. You're talking about an M.D., a Ph.D. You're talking about someone with a graduate degree in hospital science and services and all the rest. What about his background in terms of medicine? He has practiced medicine for many years. He served for 26 years in the Veterans Administration. He also served as an officer in the United States Army Reserve. He served for over 31 years in the Army Reserve, was promoted to Major General as his rank in 1990. He retired from the Army Reserve in 1993 at the University of Kentucky. James Holsinger has served as Chancellor of the University of Kentucky Medical Center. That's with responsibility for all of the colleges related to health, including medicine, nursing, pharmacy, health sciences, and dentistry. He is currently the chancellor of the state health system here in the state of Kentucky. The official title is Secretary of the Cabinet for Health and Family Services of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And even as he's retiring from that, he serves in an endowed chair, the Charles T. Wetherington Chair in the Health Sciences at the University of Kentucky. So you put all that together, and it's hard to imagine someone with more qualifications, deeper, broader, more specific qualifications, to be the chief medical officer of the United States government. So what's the controversy? Well, as you look at the press, you're going to see that there is a focus on two particular issues. One of them is, well, let me just say both of them related to homosexuality. One of them is the fact that this is a man whose deep Christian commitments and membership in the United Methodist Church led to his service on the highest judicatory body of that denomination, where he, along with other judges, made decisions related to homosexuality. He voted as one of the judges on this panel to remove a pastor for homosexuality and took other actions that gay rights activists oppose. He also wrote a paper in 1991, and this paper is what the gay rights activists see as their smoking gun. This was a paper written in 1991. It is entitled The Pathophysiology of Male Homosexuality. It was prepared for the Committee to Study Homosexuality of the United Methodist Church. Now, the paper is available online. I have a copy of it on my hand. The paper is very clear. Dr. Holsinger is arguing, now get this, that homosexuality is not natural, that heterosexuality is natural. And as a doctor, he's making his argument in medical terms. The lead sentence in the second paragraph says this: there's absolute consensus in the scientific community concerning the structure and function of the human alimentary and reproductive systems. These two systems are absolutely separate since the human does not possess a cloaca. Interesting statement. That's probably not the kind of stuff you've talked about at the dinner table, but it is a vital Christian conversation right now. We were talking earlier this week about the fact that our bodies do inform us of the purpose of which we were made. That's very much the same kind of argument that Dr. Holsinger is making here. He says that the elimination tract of the body and the reproductive tract of the body in the human species, these two tracts are completely separate. Whereas in some animals, they might be united because they have a cloaca, which is able to separate the two for specific functions. These are one-function systems, and when it comes especially to the elimination of solid waste from the body, they are completely separate systems. Now, Dr. Holsinger makes the argument that that indicates that homosexuality is not natural. At the end of his paper, he makes a statement, and if you haven't heard this, you're going to be hearing it. It's going to be all over the news. I guarantee you, when this gets to hearings, you're going to be hearing a lot about it. He says this. He says that the particular structure of the human body, listen to this, it has entered our vocabulary, the logical complementarity, the human sexes, that is, between the male and the female, has been so recognized in our culture that it has entered our vocabulary in the form of naming various pipe fittings, either the male fitting or the female fitting, depending upon which one interlocks within the other, end quote. Now, before you even ask the question about the morality of homosexuality, let's just make the obvious point. You can't argue with his statement. His statement in that particular sentence is observational, and it's simply true. When you have plumbing fittings, you have a male fitting and a female fitting. That is not some kind of theory this doctor's come up with. That's plumbing practice. And it's not just true for plumbing, it's true for many other things. In the electronics business, you have male fittings and you have female fittings. Now, I don't have to draw you a picture to know which is which. Dr. Holsinger says that tells us that whether it's an electronic function or a plumbing function or a human function, sexual function, the model that we are given is complementarity, and it's so deeply embedded in human wisdom that we even refer to plumbing fixtures that way. Now, where I'm going to go with this is necessary. I'm going to have to go into some territory here that we normally would not in a program like this, but there is no way we can just look the other way and refuse to engage this issue. Here is the sum and substance of Dr. Holsinger's argument from a public health perspective, written in 1991. He says we know that male homosexual behavior, sodomy, is not natural because when you try to use the tract of elimination for a sexual purpose, you do bring on health crises. Now, in order to do this, he has to use language in a medical term like ripping rectum and stuff like this. And folks, there you have it. The battle is engaged. You have right there the big question faced by humanity in the early 21st century. Are we made by our Creator in order to behave and to act in certain ways, or are we free to make it up as we go along? Dr. Holsinger's point back in 1991 is if you make it up as you go along, if you try to act like homosexuality is as natural as heterosexuality, you end up with a health crisis. Let me point out that that is just obviously true. That's why even in sex manuals written for homosexual men, there have to be warnings about the preventative measures that must be taken in order to avoid injury and illness by doing the very things that Dr. Holsinger warned against. Now, what we have today is a gay rights community and a culture of political correctness that says you can't say that. Even as a doctor, you can't say that. And one of the things when we return we're going to talk about is how people are now saying that he's outside the scientific consensus. We're going to be talking about what people mean when they say that. This is the Albert Mueller Program, the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll be right back.
Of the the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
This controversy has just more or less hit the media, and you can expect to be hearing a lot about it, given the fact that there's so much going on, and given the fact that you already have a presidential election campaign season heating up. I guarantee you there's going to be a lot out there. And so even in the Senate hearings, where this is likely first to receive its maximum controversy, you're going to have an awful lot of posing and all the rest. But the big thing you're hearing right now, and if you go to the major news websites and you look at the coverage on Dr. James Holsinger, what you're going to find is people who say, for instance, what Christina Gilgore, director of the Kentucky Fairness Alliance, said, quote, this ideology that is about the non-natural, unnatural nature of homosexuality, this ideology flies in the face of current scientific medical studies. That makes me uneasy that he rejects science and promotes ideology. Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting when you think about this idea that science is supposedly what's to tell us the truth about sexuality, not ideology. That raises the question what science is. David Gergen, presidential advisor to 5 sitting presidents, attacked Dr. Holsinger on the same basis.
A confirmation fight is exactly what the administration does not need. There has been a growing criticism of the administration favoring ideology over competence, and this nomination, it smacks of that.
No, what really smacks there is that David Gergen didn't read enough briefing paper before he started talking about this. This is a man with several graduate degrees, 31 years in the U.S. Army Reserve. He retired as a major general in the Medical Corps, and has been head of an entire university medical system. Try to find someone more capable by competence, Mr. Gergen. No, this is playing to the crowd on this idea that opposition to homosexuality is ideological, and that is to be overcome with science. That goes back to 1973. The American Psychological Association just voted in one meeting in 1973 to take homosexuality off of its list of psychological disorders. What was the science being presented? It's not science like what takes place in a test tube. It's not science like what takes place in astronomy or in physics. This is science as sociology, as psychology. It's driven by ideology, and I am reassured to know that there are at least some honest people who recognize that. For instance, one of them is a man by the name of Gary Greenberg. And so far as I can tell, he actually does not oppose the homosexual agenda. As a matter of fact, looking at the decision by the APA, he wrote a work entitled Right Answers, Wrong Reasons, Revisiting the Deletion of Homosexuality from the DSM. That's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychological Association. And what he has to say is that the debate over the scientific, you put that in quotation marks, scientific nature of the question was never really over science at all, because both sides just tried to use science, he says, in order to prove their pre-commitment on the issue of homosexuality. Those who wanted to argue homosexuality is natural just tried to come up with arguments they thought would pass for science, and those who did the other did the same thing. Well, I want to come back to the fact you don't need science here. You know, that is, to me, the most ludicrous nature of this. You actually don't need science. This comes back in the Christian worldview to basic knowledge. You have basic knowledge. Our bodies tell us a basic knowledge. You do not have to have a PhD in anatomy and physiology to know what leads to pregnancy and what doesn't. That you don't have to have a scientific graduate degree for that. Most people throughout human history figured that out, and there are very few people with PhDs in physiology out there. Amazingly enough, the human race found out how to reproduce. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The question for today is this. What do we say when we have a Surgeon General nominee who was opposed because he believes that homosexuality is unnatural? What do we say to that? Do we say, well, that's just too high a price to pay? That's just too much controversy for 2007. Anyone with that kind of conviction should be just eliminated from the list. Or do we say, as I'm going to argue we had better say, that this man, who is superbly qualified on medical grounds, must not be disqualified because he believes what humans, by a moral consensus, have believed for 20 centuries. And what, let's face it, most people believe even now about the naturalness of sexual behavior. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Interesting that we would end the week on this controversy that at the beginning of the week wasn't even yet quite on the horizon. But here we are. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. This is the place where we come and talk about the conflict of worldviews. A conflict of worldviews right now focused once again on the issue of homosexuality, where people are now trying to say that science is telling us that homosexuality is just as natural as heterosexuality. What kind of science would that be? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is what the world's talking about. And this is the place for intelligent Christian talk. We'll be right back.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're discussing the controversy over Dr. James Holsinger, President George W. Bush's nominee to be the next Surgeon General of the United States. The issue, I guess we should not be surprised, is homosexuality. And the opposition to this eminently qualified physician comes down to the fact that he has written in the past that he believes homosexuality to be unnatural, writing specifically about male homosexuality. He used his medical expertise in order to say that there's a model of complementarity between men and women that is natural in creation, especially in the human being, because the human body is so constructed so that the tract for the elimination of solid waste and the tract for reproduction are completely separate systems. And because of that, he argues we should understand that there are public health implications in all this. But more than that, he's arguing this paper was written for the United Methodist Church, as that denomination was studying the issue of homosexuality. He said it should tell us something spiritual and theological about the human being in terms of the normativity of heterosexuality. You know, the amazing thing is, I believe even in this culture of political correctness these days, most people still believe that. What I mean by that is I think even people who say, I don't have a problem with homosexual behavior, I don't want to outlaw homosexual behavior, I'm happy with gay marriage or whatever, even when you find people who say that, they still don't think that homosexual acts are normal and natural. That's the point that the Apostle Paul makes in Romans chapter 1. It's a point that you don't have to have, as I've said so many times already, a PhD in anatomy and physiology to figure out. But in this politically correct age, we really have bought into all these lies. It's kind of like a giant network or a web of lies. And in recent days, we've been looking at so many of these because they've been in the headlines. A Methodist pastor comes out and was a woman one week and is a man this week, and says that medical science, she says God's gift of medical science is now allowing her to bring her body into alignment with her, quote, gender orientation or her. Well, that just isn't so. I mean, there's no surgeon on the planet who can turn a woman into a man. It isn't going to happen. You can change some appearances. You might even be able to, do through hormone therapy and through surgery, make it believable in terms of what someone would see, and so that someone could pass as a man rather than as a woman. But they still aren't a man. It's still not going to happen. And frankly, that's just one of the lies we wink at in this culture. We act like that makes sense. But the average person, no matter how informed, basically knows that just isn't going to happen. We see this in terms of fighting against natural limits. We talked earlier this week about the fact that there's so many women who are experiencing a fertility crisis, but it's really a crisis of delaying childbearing until the woman's in the years when childbearing is unlikely. Even after doing that program, I was sent an article by an informed listener to a medical study saying that after the age of 40, a woman's chance of pregnancy in any given month is only 5%. You start looking at that and you realize our bodies are telling us something. And while we're talking about reproduction, boy, are our bodies telling us something about reproduction. And what our bodies are telling us is that the way to reproduce is still heterosexual. And even if you don't have a man or a woman in the room, even if you're in an in vitro fertilization clinic, you still have to deal with the fact you've got a male cell and a female cell. Now, there are people that want to eclipse that. There are people that want to transcend that. There are scientists, and we've talked about that too, around the world trying to get over that, but not yet. Not yet. And even if they do it, they're still going to have to try to emulate the male cell and the female cell. What we have here is complementarity. Dr. Holsinger in this paper he wrote back in 1991, made the statement that is beyond refutation, that the idea of complementarity is so written into the warp and woof of our culture that we even refer to male and female pipe fittings. And then on from that, we know there are male and female electronic fittings and all the rest. We talk about that routinely. It's in catalogs for parts. It's in the common parlance. It's in the instruction manual for putting together things. Because we know that you can't take two female electronic parts and make the connection. You can't take two male parts and make the connection. It takes one of each. That's complementarity. That's electronics. That's not theology, okay? But it is pointing to something. But what plumbing fixtures point to pales in significance over against what our bodies point to. Our bodies point to this pattern of complementarity. That's how God intended us. Now, that is radical language these days. This is why I make the point over and over again that Christians who think they can duck this issue are going to find out the hard way that they can't. You're going to find out you can't duck this issue. You can say, I'm tired of having to deal with the issue of homosexuality, I'm tired of having to talk about it and all the rest. But the bottom line is going to come down to the fact you can't duck the issue. Because it's going to come around to your home, it's going to come around to your church, it's going to come around to your neighborhood, and you're going to find yourself confronting this. And you also can't eventually avoid the head-on worldview collision that is at stake here. You can try to finesse the issue, you can try to suggest, you know, there's middle ground, you can try to wink at it and look the other way, but eventually you're going to have to say, one way or another, that you believe that homosexuality is either moral or immoral. It's either just fine. Just as fine as heterosexual sex, or you're going to have to say that you genuinely believe that God made us, that there's a creator behind us, that the creator had a purpose, and the creator has the right to define every aspect of our lives, including our sexuality. You're going to have to choose one day or another. Every church is going to have to choose, and every denomination. That's why those denominations that simply won't define the sexual issue one way or the other, and that's what's going on. Mainline Protestantism is caught in an enormous bind. They have the tug of 20 centuries of Christian tradition. They have the tug of Scripture, which is unambiguous about the normativity of heterosexuality. And they still have a lot of basically conservative people sitting in the pews paying the bills. And on the other side, they have an elite totally sold out to an agenda to normalize homosexuality, totally sold out to moral relativism on issues of sexuality. And so that's why at every one of their meetings, whether it's this denomination or that, in the left wing of Protestantism, it's just chaos every time they come together. The United Methodist House of Bishops recently just more or less tabled a motion on the homosexuality. Why? Because they can't go anywhere with this, because they won't go one direction or the other. But eventually, you're going to have to go one direction or another. You can try to put the brakes on and slow the whole thing down. You can try stalling tactics, but eventually you're going to have to decide. Your local church, listener, one day is going to have to decide this. You're going to have to decide whether you believe homosexuality is a sin or not. You might avoid talking about this, but it's going to show up in your church one way or another, and it probably already has, whether you're ready to acknowledge it or not. Eventually, every family is going to have to be really clear. Parents are going to have to be clear about where you stand on this. And Christian parents, if you're not teaching your children basic biblical wisdom on these issues, don't be surprised when they come back sounding like they've been raised by someone else. Because in effect, they have been. Back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. USA Today is out with an article today on the fact, again, that there's controversy over the fact that Republican presidential candidates, at least three of them, have affirmed that they do not believe in the theory of evolution. At least they do not believe in naturalistic evolution. And again, it's on the front page of the paper. That, to me, is continually fascinating. One of the things that brings this into even more fascinating focus is the fact that USA Today, by its own poll, taken along with the Gallup organization, makes clear that an incredible number of Americans don't believe in evolution. If you take a sophisticated poll that asks the question about evolution, whether it's guided or unguided by some kind of intelligent design. In other words, if you ask the question, do you believe that evolution happened just without any kind of direction whatsoever, only a minority of Americans believe that. And I want to go back to the fact that there's just a natural wisdom that I think God has given us by common grace that makes it obvious that that there was no accident that produced human beings. So what are we saying? We're saying here that there is something going on that demonstrates the distance between the media elite and the people that actually populate this country. Every once in a while, it's good to be reminded of that. It's good to be reminded of the fact that the worldview of those who control the dominant news media, the mainstream media, is very different from that of the people in what many of them actually call a flyover country. In other words, the most important stuff is what goes on the coast, according to so many in the elite. So Los Angeles and New York are the two capitals of our culture, Hollywood and the news media. And you could throw in some other things as well, San Francisco, Washington. But between the East Coast and the West Coast, there's the enormous center of this country. And this is why, when you look at these political maps, you're really looking somewhat, at least, at a worldview map. Not a complete equal overlap, but still very interesting that if you're counting votes or counting convictions, you still got to come up with some division between blue America and red America. But the fact is that a majority of Americans reject a naturalistic theory of evolution. So when you have some presidential candidates who all of a sudden say what the American people have been saying, I fail to see why this is front page news in the nation's elite newspapers. Once again, it tells us something about the distance between this. USA Today, again today, a story on page 13A. Here's the headline, Evolution Issue Separates Candidates. We'll be watching this with you because the clash of worldviews is especially apparent when issues of controversy are being discussed when decisions have to be made. It's one thing to have them discussed in a time of some kind of languid season of public conversation. It's another thing when people have to decide which candidate they're going to support. When it comes down to the vote made in a ballot booth or a big decision in terms of public policy. Back next week from San Antonio, Texas for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Yes, sometimes even controversy. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.